Blog Talk Radio.
Heart one day beats its final beat, his lungs breathe their final breath, and if what that man did in his life makes the blood pulse through the body of others and makes them bleed deeper in something than larger than life, then his essence, his spirit will be immortalized by the storytellers, by the loyalty, by the memory of those who honor him and make the running the man did live forever. You are the legend makers of Ultimate Warrior.
Hello and welcome to another edition of HIAC Talk Radio. I am, of course, your host, the Dean of Credibility Double D, and you can find me at Folsom County. You can also follow the official Twitter at HIAC Talk Radio and HIACTalkRadio.com. With me, as always, he is the above-average comedian, Dan the Man Colachico. How are you, Dan?
Doing fine this evening. You can follow me on Twitter at DanLaw83 and Obey the Puck at Obey Puck Show.
And our wrestling MMA analyst is Omega Squad, Chris Green. Chris, how are you here tonight?
I'm doing good. Follow me on Twitter at Omega Squad.
Now tonight we're also going to be joined by World Series of Fighting heavyweight Derek Meeman. He will be joining us in approximately 30 minutes. So make sure you tune in for that. We will be discussing all sorts of things, including WrestleMania, the Hall of Fame, and, of course, Best of the Best. But we're going to start off with a discussion on some really surreal news after the weekend that this man had, and that is, of course, the Ultimate Warrior. His legal name is now Warrior. He was born Jim Helwig, and he suddenly passed away at age 54 just yesterday evening in Arizona. TMZ reported he was simply walking to his car, collapsed, and he was pronounced dead at the hospital not too long after that. Very strange, because if you listened to last week, you had me questioning this man's legacy, this man's should he be in the Hall of Fame, I think was the question I asked. And I go back and I think through a child's eyes, whether I was 10, I was 11 when he debuted on WWE television. I was aware of him from UWF before that. And if I go back there and look through things from a 10-year-old's eyes and remember how excited I was when he won the Intercontinental title at SummerSlam 88, when 2 years later he was in the main event against Hulk Hogan, and that was a changing of the guard. Even as a young lad, I knew that. And you just see these things differently. It's a shame because I think his legacy was spoiled for a little reason, and he brought this up during his Hall of Fame speech with the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. And you go insider, you have Hulk Hogan badmouthing him, you have Vince badmouthing him on that, Christian making fun of him, Jericho making fun of him, various other people making fun of him. And you go, well, if they don't like him, yeah, I guess his legacy was in question. I suppose he wasn't as exciting as he was. I suppose he didn't mean as much as he really did. Well, I think the way that many people felt after this weekend, and especially going into last night, that has all changed. The man did have a legacy. He is a Hall of Famer, rightfully so. He did say goodbye to the fans. Dan, your thoughts, and we'll follow this up with Omega's thoughts, on the legacy of one of the most unique individuals who ever came through the WWF, later on, of course, the WWE.
I kind of still don't know what to say. All of this happened so quickly, and you know, I'm still kind of gathering thoughts. Everything that I wrote for the web that you put on the website, I kind of just wrote. Literally, was about to go to bed, and I read your post from about Triple H's post, and just I felt like I had to get it out. We've said, everybody knows that DVD that came out almost 10 years ago now, maybe even less.
Maybe I think more. I think it was 2003.
Oh, jeez. The huge smear campaign. And, you know, we all wrote him off as a joke, but unfortunately, it has to take something like this to realize that, you know, I stated it, 10... I was 10 through 13 when he was on top of his game, and always loved him on TV. He was great. The persona, the amount of energy, even the promos as a little kid were great. Some of them I still, you know, him and Macho Man, still can't follow some of them, but, I mean, as a child, he was just awesome to watch him on TV. And he was no slouch in the ring, obviously. And I just watched it today. That WrestleMania 6 match was, I mean, Hogan and him put on a great match. And, you know, we always say things about Hogan not performing in the ring. That man, they put on a top 10 level WrestleMania match. And like I said, I have a different perspective than the rest of you. I'm a little, well, than you, Dean. I'm a little younger. Had him for a couple of years. Then he disappeared. And then thought I had him come back in WCW, and the first 5 minutes were executed so well, and it was such a letdown that for years I really did want to see him come back and do something. And we got him back, and now that's the best I could put it. Now he's gone again, and I'm not going to speculate. People were within 10 minutes speculating and doing all this stuff, and I don't know if he knew, or obviously you never know when your time is up. He came back to us, said his piece. He told his story, that DVD, that Blu-ray that came out, and left this earth. And I can't put a button on it. I can't put a period on the end of the sentence. It still hasn't really sunk in. Chris, has it even sunk in with you?
You know, really, I haven't had time to process this because of things in my day-to-day life have taken priority. But, you know, I woke up this morning and, you know, I woke up early because I'm stressing about something for work. And then to look at Twitter and say, good God, I just saw that man, you know, 24 hours ago.
Yeah.
Talking on a national TV show and being adulated by the fans, being not worshipped, but, you know, loved and thanked and appreciated by the fans. And just like that, he was gone. And you know, I thought about the other people we've lost in similar fashion. I think of Eddie Guerrero, and how surreal that was that
we had just seen Eddie Guerrero
wrestle on Friday night, and then we knew he was and then he was gone all of a sudden. And it's just weird. It's just surreal. I haven't really processed it other than to think, good God, at least he went out as on top as you possibly could get in the wrestling business.
Very true. To that point, if you think about, we saw him for the past 3 days. We saw him Saturday night in the Hall of Fame. He was the headliner, came out with his two young daughters, and gave a really good speech. You know, it was a little rambling at points and a little long, but it was one of his better speeches I've had the opportunity to listen to. It was inspiring in some points. It was, at points, he became a little angry and agitated when he would think about the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior and that DVD. But I think overall you have to think of being thankful that he had that opportunity. And then you see him the next night on WrestleMania. He comes out again. He's the headliner, has his own music play, and he comes out and waves to the fans there at the Superdome. And then you have the opportunity to see him again. So he was just so in our minds after years of not being there, after years of really the only time you heard about him recently, before he was put into the Hall of Fame, he was put into WWE 2K14 as a downloadable character. So there's a little excitement with that. But before that, it was really just the strange things he would put out about Hogan on YouTube. And his legacy was kind of in question for a while because of strange things he would say in his speeches and things. And I'm not getting into that, but I just think it's very odd that after all that time goes by, he's finally back. And, I mean, you couldn't write a better screenplay. You couldn't write a better television pilot than what this man finally getting the redemption, finally actually embracing Vince McMahon after years of lawsuits, years of just bitter feelings. If you thought Bret Hart over the screw job was bad blood, this was bad blood too. This was lawsuits, and this was a lot of things of that nature. And I mean, an entire DVD. If you think about the entire catalog of the WWE DVD catalog, if you go back and you look at it, there's only one smear job in that entire collection. And you just have to say to yourself, and that's including everybody, people that have, superstar Billy, that's everybody that has been on bad terms or not with the company. There's only one smear campaign, and that's the Ultimate Warrior. So think about that. Think about all the hard feelings, and finally he has the opportunity to come back, say thank you to the fans, say thank you for the people that were on his side this entire time. And it's really just a shame, because you listen to that Hall of Fame speech and you're like, yeah, he deserves that. He deserves to be there. He is the headliner. It's the right time for him to go in. Dan, just if you had anything else, if not, then Chris.
I think, and I don't want to beat this in the ground, but being the WCW mark that I was, that run, if you call it that, is something that will upset me for years now that there's no way out of it. Not that there was, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, it just was so, he was better than that.
Well, WCW had a way of destroying legacies.
And I really do believe that was, and this is just me, I could be talking out of my backside, but that was go back, not a revenge match, but a go back from WrestleMania 6. But that's why I feel so badly that thank God he came back on TV. He got the Hall of Fame. He had that last speech, and thank God that is the last thing we see, because before that, other than that wrestling match he had with Orlando Jordan a couple of years ago, was WCW Halloween Havoc. And if the WWF Smear DVD wasn't going to do it, that match was going to mess up a legacy. And I'm just, if it was going to happen this way, I'm glad it happened this way. It's the best way I can say it.
Chris, your final thoughts on...
I disagree with the idea that his legacy was tarnished. I think the man may have been tarnished by the DVD and by his speeches and maybe even the WCW thing.
Ugh.
But realistically, when you think about the Ultimate Warrior himself in his heyday, that image endured throughout the decades. Kids in the Three of Us generation remembered him, remembered his energy, remembered his passion, and you could see that in the YouTubes of today and the internet videos and that kind of thing, where the Warrior would show up because people remembered him, because he was memorable, and because, as Dean said when we started off this conversation, he was unique. Yeah. And find me someone's career that doesn't have bad decisions, poor choices, things happen. Hulk Hogan is the most revered figure in pro wrestling, but let's face it, his slate isn't clean either. This, I don't think the Ultimate Warrior as a character, I think his legacy endured throughout the decades, and this weekend only solidified that. And, it is heartbreaking that the man, the vessel of the Ultimate Warrior, the former Jim Hellwig, has passed so quickly from our memory, and leaving behind certainly his wife and his daughters, who were so proud to see him reach the pinnacle of the sport on a weekend. It's just tragic.
Go ahead, Dan.
We always talk about being better and overcoming. Somebody, myself, anybody could use this to just, with all the drama in wrestling, that we're all, that it could just be overcome, because I could drop dead right now doing this, and I would have several people that I would want to apologize to or make up with, you know what I mean? And that's another thing I'm glad he did. Everybody threw that all away, and everybody was one family again. It was great.
I'm going to go back in time as we close out this discussion on the Ultimate Warrior to WrestleMania 6, probably the highest point for him in the ring. And you go back, and a simple maneuver such as the Greco-Roman lock with those two, with Warrior gaining the advantage and then Hogan coming back, that got bigger pops from the crowd than anything else. And you go back to that, more so than just a simple move like that. More than that was just that he was there. And, we said a lot about his legacy as we were talking. You can't beat being in the main event of WrestleMania during that era, still during the era of Hulkamania, the rock and wrestling era, the end of that, going into a newer era than the new generation. He headlined WrestleMania 6 with Hulk Hogan, and he came out and gave Hogan his first clean pinfall loss in Hogan's second WWF run. So It's really amazing when you go back and you think about that. Hogan wasn't cleanly pinned since he won the title in 84, January of 84, from the Iron Sheik. And you just go on, and Warrior was that guy that beat him. And if that doesn't say legacy, I don't know what else does. And that finish was just amazing. The finish of that match, the Hogan comeback, misses the leg drop, and finally followed up by Warrior Splash, was just an amazing way to end that match, and a great match indeed. So there we have it. We also had WrestleMania this weekend. Daniel Bryan is on top of the wrestling world. He did a Bret Hart. He wrestled two matches, walks out of WrestleMania with the World Heavyweight Championship, overcoming all the odds, not just from Batista and Randy Orton, but also from The Authority. Guys, I'll start with you, Omega. Your thoughts on Daniel Bryan? The story was bookend perfectly. What do you think?
You know, that went about as well as you could hope for. You had a really good match, really strong match from Daniel Bryan and Triple H. A very into it crowd at WrestleMania, as you would expect. And then the main event was very passable. I mean, to some extent, Daniel Bryan wasn't involved in a lot of it, but the match itself with Randy Orton and Batista kind of teaming up against him, putting him on a stretcher, and then him ultimately picking up the victory, was as perfect as you could. The only term I can think of is scripted. So,
yeah.
So I mean, and the crowd was into it. The image was well done, and it was good. It was good. You know, it certainly is a feel good WrestleMania from that perspective. And I think the next night on Raw truly solidified how big a star Daniel Bryan is right now.
Definitely there. I want to say the move of the night was probably the Batista bomb to the RKO. And the MVP of that match was that monitor that was still tucked.
Good Lord.
Did
Randy landed on that, right?
Oh, completely on
it. Oh, yeah.
That looked so painful.
Dead on. What happened, it fell in to the table. When I went back and watched, it fell in. They didn't have a chance to rip it out, so it fell in. So when the table, you know, implodes, it's just right there. So the MVP, I think, of that match was the monitor. Now, Dan, your thoughts on Daniel Bryan? The story has a pretty good finish.
It couldn't have. Chris said it perfectly. That couldn't have gone any better. That was amazing. That the noise that arena, that place made, that stadium. I was highly impressed, especially going through the table and two guys almost killing themselves. It was amazing. And I thought there was no, what's the word I'm looking for? There was no bad, everybody was perfect. From Triple H to Daniel Bryan, the first match, right into the main event, Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton, Batista, it was all perfect. Except for his boots. Batista's boots were weird.
Now, moving right along, before that, the wind was taken out of the sails, and it wasn't because of the Divas for once. The wind was taken out of the sails because the streak was broken. It is no more. Brock Lesnar defeats the streak in one of the most shocking moments I have ever seen in professional wrestling. You could say 23 years in the making. This idea that Brock would defeat the streak, that's a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for, an exaggeration, but...
Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch. I mean, Brock would have been, what, 10?
Probably.
Yes, 10, 12.
12. He would have been 12. But the thing is, The streak probably didn't become important until he beat Flair, and it was 10-0 at that time at WrestleMania 18. And it became a thing with Shawn Michaels. That's when it really became booked as, you know, this is important. And it became important, and it was that attraction match. If there's only one time a year you see The Undertaker, it should be he's defending the streak against someone who rises up to challenge him. Now, granted, that got us two matches with Triple H, which I thought were fantastic. It got us two matches with Shawn Michaels, and it got us the CM Punk match. However, nobody could do it. Why Brock Lesnar? I'll give you my thoughts after you guys. Dan, why Brock Lesnar?
I really can't answer this question other than why not. He's a bad MF-er, okay? And on a story angle, you can believe that this guy who is an MMA fighter could beat up this old man.
All right, Chris. Why Brock Lesnar?
Because he's Taker's buddy. I mean, it's the only thing I can think of. Because, I'm less angered by it, 3 days later. But I still cannot fathom from a business standpoint why you would waste the streak on a part-time wrestler. A guy who is, by all accounts, probably not going to show up again after Monday. I just don't get it. Now, lots of speculation around this, but my speculation was potentially that Undertaker started getting into it this year, started training for the match, and then just found out that it was just too hard. And
he's 49. He celebrated his birthday a few weeks ago on Monday Night Raw.
Right, and he is 49, and let's face it, he looked beat up in that match. He did not look like a man who could go. Certainly he wasn't the Taker of old. He looked old in that match. And, maybe he just said to himself and said, just realized, I can't do this another year. There isn't going to be another year. And so he likes Brock. He wanted to break the streak to Brock a while back and decided that was it. I disagree. I see if you're going to give it to a part-time wrestler in Brock Lesnar, streak should never have ended. But just my opinion.
I look at that match and I look at the entire setup of this match. I think the opponent was already locked in. Taker began training probably in January. They probably came up with the idea that it would be Brock right around that time. And this is all speculation. I have no sources. I have no idea. And once they said it's Brock, Taker, who is a huge MMA fan, someone who would show up at all Brock's fights, they even staged that you want to do this. The idea has been passed around that he wanted to lose the streak while Brock was still contracted to UFC. He wanted a legitimate badass, for lack of a better word, to come in and beat him, a fighter, a legitimate fighter. And you look at the credentials of Brock Lesnar, he's another guy similar to the Warrior. People kind of forgot his legacy. The fact that he is a two-time champion, the fact that he was a UFC champion, the fact that before all that, he was only pinned twice in his entire wrestling collegiate career. And when you stack all that up and you look at it and you go, plus they were friends, I think it makes a lot of sense for the Undertaker to look at Brock and go, you're the guy. As far as people knowing, I don't think the commentators knew. I think Paul knew. I think Undertaker knew. I think Brock knew. And Vince, obviously. Probably Triple H. Probably a few people, but not as many as normally would know something like that.
We do all agree that that was not called an audible in the ring, correct?
I initially thought that, but no. I think...
I did too.
No. I mean, it was planned. Maybe the finish was audible, but
He was losing. He was not losing. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
But that story that was told of this young guy that just kicks out, that gets out of the Hell's Gates, the Googleplanifer, MMA fans, that he just gets out of these moves and he gets out of the signature moves. Now, granted, we've seen plenty of people kick out of a tombstone and we've seen things of that nature, but Brock was just one. He's younger and he's a conqueror, and he won the match. So
not that, and overall, I enjoyed the hell out of WrestleMania 30, and I don't care who disagrees. I really, really loved the show, but the Undertaker Brock match, I just was on the edge of my seat, staring, fixated.
Well, if you were on your bed, Dan, I suppose you could have been on the edge of your sheet.
That's a very good point, but I wasn't. I was on the couch.
So, perhaps there was a sheet on your couch. I'm not sure.
There is not. That's what I... But, just staring. And it had nothing to do... Well, I mean, obviously it had a little bit to do with it's the street match, what's going to happen, but just watching every move and not touching the phone for the most part.
You know... There's a certain amount of hubris that goes into this as well. Undertaker comes out, has the coffin already on the stage, and then he burns it. It reminded me of The Walking Dead and Maggie burning her own picture. So,
yeah.
Okay.
I was just like, why is he burning it? He hasn't defeated the man yet.
I'm just saying, when he stabbed him in the hand, I knew he was going to lose.
Sure. Well, you did go on record last week. Your pick was...
All kidding aside.
Brock Lesnar.
All kidding aside.
Although last year you did pick CM Punk.
Right, I'm getting to that. I picked CM Punk last year just to pick him. But I just had it... When it came down to... When we were doing the episode, okay, who do you really think is going to win? I just had this weird feeling. That's how I felt. I really felt this year was it. CM Punk, I was just picking because, yeah, I like to see CM Punk beat him. But this, I really thought it was going to be 20-0, but this one, I just had this weird feeling.
Final thoughts, briefly, Chris, on the streak ending.
Look, I mean, it's a record that will probably never be duplicated in pro wrestling again. It is a huge part of Undertaker's legacy, and sure, had to end sometime, and if this is the way Undertaker chose for it to go out, that's fine. I'll get over it, but I'm still disappointed.
Well, that being said, one thing I'm not disappointed about is our guest has arrived.
Nice.
Of course, it is the caveman, Derek Meeman. Now, Meeman probably has one of my favorite knockouts of all time because it included a flare flop. We talked with the referee of that fight, Bill Bookwater, who said he really couldn't see it from his angle, and once he realized flare flop, and he had to step in. But more along the point, Meeman is an exciting fighter. He has, of his 17 career victories, 11 have come by knockout. He's only taken it to decision 4 times. He's an exciting fighter, and when I saw that fight, it was actually from that fight, the World Series of Fighting fight with Gracie. I said, I got to reach out and try to get him on. During your research, Omega, what did you come up with about this exciting fighter?
As I was doing my research, I certainly saw the Hollis Gracie KO, which was fabulous. And I saw a guy who's got good striking, good wrestling background, and has the tools to beat some guys, and certainly coming on a 5-win streak in his career right now, certainly got some success ahead of him, so I'm eager to talk to him.
The only undefeated heavyweight in World Series of Fighting. Keep that in mind. He's our guest right after this.
Can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. tell them that God's gonna cut them down.
All right, joining us right now, as I said, he is a World Series of Fighting heavyweight, and he is the only defeated heavyweight in World Series of Fighting. It is Derek the Caveman Meeman. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We are doing well as well. You're, of course, with Omega Squad, Chris Green, and Dan. Now, the first question, we're not talking MMA to start out. I want to get your thoughts on Brock Lesnar, former UFC World Heavyweight Champion, defeating The Undertaker for that streak.
Man, that's crazy. Like, I didn't get to see it live because I was working, but I was watching, obviously, Monday Night Raw at work the next night. We were just hanging out with some customers, and, man, it's like, I just really thought it was going to be Sting next year. I thought they were going to build it up. Sting had hinted for coming back. I thought he was going to beat Brock, and Sting was going to make a cameo at Raw. I just really wanted it to be Sting. I was a little anticlimactic having him beat Brock Lesnar, I thought.
Wow. Well, we agree 100%, man.
Yeah, true there. Dan is a big Sting
Mark.
Fanatic. You could certainly say that. So, besides, of course, Brock Lesnar winning that match, what were your thoughts on WrestleMania? And we'll get back to this as well. But just your overall thoughts on WrestleMania.
Like I said, I didn't get to watch it. I was at work. I was watching. I was getting the Twitter updates, and I was watching online, you know what I mean, reading about it. And, like, I wish I could have saw the opening sequence. I heard that was awesome, or I read that was awesome. And I think it's really cool that Daniel Bryan is a man now, and that they're going with him. Like, that's really awesome. They're doing the Yes Movement, and I'm glad they didn't mess that up with I really thought Triple H was going to, like, ruin it, and it, you know, and he wasn't going to be the champ. But, you know, I'm really happy that he won, so that's cool.
Awesome. Now, moving right along, I want to get into your background. When did you decide, I want to punch guys? I want to get into a cage and punch guys, because I tell you one thing, you can really knock a guy out. So when did you decide that this is what you wanted to do for a living?
Well, I was in high school, right? I was wrestling. I was doing really well my senior year. I ended up not making state, and, like, everybody's like, so what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I'm like, well, I'm going to wrestle, right? That's what I'm going to do. Like, I don't know. I'm going to go to college and wrestle. Like, well, no, what are you going to do after that? So, like, that got me thinking right there, like, well, I don't know. Well, hell, I just want to wrestle forever. Like, I don't want to work. You know what I mean? I don't want a real job. I just want to, you know, wrestle. So I got into college, and my high school wrestling coach hit me up. And right after Nationals, my sophomore year, he hit me up. He's like, dude, have you seen this Ultimate Fighter thing? This is crazy. This is, like, right up your alley. And, like, that summer I went back to my hometown. Me and him started YouTubing stuff, and I was in a fight 2 months later. And ever since then, I've been hooked.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, so, you know, how does one make that transition from, you know, just high school wrestling and then 2 months later being in a cage? What training did you manage to acquire in that 2 months to prepare you for that?
Well, it wasn't high, like, it was college wrestling. I wrestled. I was a JUCO All-American, and then I was at Iowa for a season until I tore my knee out. But it was fairly easy transition. Like, it wasn't easy. Like I said, we were on YouTube watching videos of how to do it, right? And I was just like, well, this is what I want to do. I can make money doing this. I don't want to really work a real job. I want to, like, this is what I want to do. I just want to keep competing. So, It just kind of fell into place. And, like, Chad Bergmeier, he runs the Iowa Challenge, Extreme Challenges, and I got a hold of him. And, like I said, I was fighting 2 months later off of just training with my high school wrestling coach, and we were YouTubing how to do triangle chokes and everything else.
So what was that first fight like? What was the experience like?
Dude, it was terrifying. It was terrifying. I love Chad Bergmeier to death, but this dude brought me in to get killed, I swear to God. So I'm like, I get into the ring, right? I'm wearing my athletic shorts, like straight up, like drawstring athletic shorts in a cage. And they just announced me as like a wrestler, da-da-da, right? 0-0 record. Well, I'm fighting this guy by the name of Nathan Kirby. And they announced him, and he's like a Miletich guy at the time. And this was like right when Miletich was still really big. They saw Matt Hughes there and everything. And they announced him as 9-time Taekwondo national champion, Olympic team member, world Taekwondo, like, final, like, all this crazy shit. Me and my high school wrestler, we look at each other, right? And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I'm like, you can probably see the fear on my face. I'm terrified. Like, I'm so terrified. And he just looks at me like, you got it, man. You can do it. I'm like, all right. Whatever. Like, you know what I mean? There's nothing I can do now. I'm already in the cage. I might as well. You know what I mean? There's nothing I can do but go. So it was a crazy, crazy experience.
So from that point, you did pick up the win. How did you get?
No, I didn't. I didn't. You know what I mean?
Okay. I'm looking at your. I'm looking at your professional. I'm sorry, but
yeah, as an amateur, I was 0-2.
Really?
So this is the story of this guy. This is how this night actually moved me forward into MMA, like, and actually brought me to where I am today, I feel like. So I lied. I'm 1-2 as an amateur. So that night, I get into the cage, right, and the guy that owned this other promotion in town, like a big promotion, TRF, Iowa Mainstream. It was a pretty good Iowa promotion. It was a judge. And so Kirby comes out. We start the fight. He kicks me over the head, like straight up just kicks me in the head. And I just, like, walk through it. Like, I don't know. I just have, like, a naturally hard head. And I walk through it, take him down. I'm beating this dude up with no experience whatsoever. I'm YouTubing videos of how not to lose fights, right? And second round, I'm still winning. He ends up triangle choking me with, like, 10 seconds left in the second round. And that was more, like, not taking away from the win from that guy, but more due, I was exhausted. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was like, whatever. It's cool. I made $50 for travel money. I thought I was the man. This is awesome. You know, so he talks to me right afterwards and was like, man, dude, have you ever trained? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, no, man, we just wrestle every day and, you know, lift weights. And for about a day, he's like, dude, where do you live? I'm like, well, I'm moving to Iowa City, actually. He's like, I got a team for you. You need to go to this team, and I'll get you fights, and, you know, and the rest is history. So he ended up getting me fights and stuff, so, and hooked me up with Team Hard Drive. Like, you guys probably heard of, like, Eric Koch, Steve Carl, Tony Koch, all those guys. Yep, that's like, the first team I started training with.
Okay. So at what point did you decide you're going to go professional then? Is it after you teamed up with Team Hard Drive, or
after I teamed up with Team Hard Drive, actually, my girlfriend at the time, I got pregnant, and I was like, well, this is stupid. Why would I keep fighting for free? It's like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm doing the same exact thing for only 2 minutes less than these guys are doing for, you know what I mean? Like, I can do that. I can do that same thing. Well, let's do it. So
you make the transition, and your first professional fight, you're victorious. It's a second round TKO for the Iowa Challenge. Now, What's that like? The experience have finally paid off. You had kind of a 1-2 record for Ammies. When you made that jump to professional, were you satisfied that you had the tools necessary to be successful as a professional?
Yeah, and like weirdly, that fight we thought was going to be an amateur fight that night. Like, it was going to be my last amateur fight. You know, like, oh, let's get you to 500, and then we'll go to pros, right? And my coach already believed me. He just wanted to, like, have the record look a little better or whatever, you know. So, well, we get there, and it ends up being a pro fight. I know the guy. He wrestled in the same state I did in, like, high school, right? So I know him, like, and it was just like any other fight, really. It wasn't, like, anything, you know, I didn't overthink it or anything like that.
Okay, now I'm looking at your career up until that point, and you were on the regionals, you could say, until Bellator. I want to save Bellator for a next question, but as far as fighting for, like, Adrenaline MMA and Mainstream MMA, Soldiers of Fortune, Iowa Challenge, what's it like? Is that just a further stepping stone for you, getting your feet wet on all these different scales, trying to get the name out there? What's it like just fighting on the regional level?
Yeah, it's just, you know, I mean, it's trying to accumulate wins, try to get your name out there. And, like, you know, it was good. Like, I had really good people behind me. Like, Mainstream was really big for Iowa. You know what I mean? They were on TV here. They were on TV in Florida on Sun Sports. Like, they were a fairly big regional promotion. Then Adrenaline, I don't know if you guys remember, that was Monty Cox's promotion. He was trying, that was on HGNet. So, like,
okay.
I had really good guys behind me, like, putting me in good situations to get my name out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just really, really good for my career to have good people around me.
Yeah. So you had several fights before you got to Bellator. What was the biggest challenge for you, you know, coming from your wrestling background? What was the hardest thing to pick up?
Striking was the hardest thing. Like, when I first started boxing, I was literally turning my back to people scared to get punched in the face. Like, that's how bad it was. It took time and, like, sparring sessions of people punching me until I got used to, like, seeing punches come at me without cringing or closing my eyes or turning away.
Hmm. So, oh, interesting. And, yeah. And you seem to have turned that around, and certainly.
Yeah.
You know, looking at you fight those fights in the regionals, and then you get the call to go to Bellator. What was that experience like, your first probably in a, well, let's call it a major promotion?
That Bellator call never came until, all right, it's a funny story. I'm with my buddy Steve Carl, right? He's fighting in the Bellator welterweight for me. He's fighting Brett Cooper first round. I think this is like the first or second season of Bellator. And I get off the plane, and that Steve is already like, I have like 9 text messages. Like, you want to fight? I'm like, what are you talking about? So I call him up. I got offered that fight on 48-hour notice, like right when I got off the plane. They're like, dude, will you fight for us? We need someone. So it wasn't like I had time to, like, think about, like, oh, Bellator's calling me. It was like I got off the plane, and 2 hours later I was cutting weight.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. So what is that like, having to try to cut weight in 48 hours? I mean, I imagine that must be, like, ridiculously harder than a regular weight cut.
Oh, man, it was brutal. I was, like, the fight was supposed to be at 190, like it was a 185 catch weight, but they gave me 5 pounds because I was just getting off a plane. I ended up making only, like, 92, but, like, I only made 85, like, or 90, like, 2 or 3 times in my career. I was trying to make up for the Ultimate Fighter, and that was, like, the worst weight cut of my life. Like, I weigh 250 right now, so if that tells you anything, like, 185 was horrible. It sucked so bad.
Yeah. So, you know, you lost that fight in Bellator by submission. Was there ever any more interest from Bellator, or did you just never heard from him again after that one loss?
You know what? All right, I'll tell you the story. So Sam Kaplan, who's a matchmaker at the time, right? He still is. Okay. So I told him, I'm like, hey, dude, I'm going to take this fight, right? I'm going to cut this weight. And we'll see what happens. Like, I thoroughly thought I was going to win. I think I won the first round. Who knows? But anyway, I ended up losing the fight, so it doesn't matter. I'm like, but give me another shot. Like, please hook me up with another fight. If I do this for you on 48-hour notice, this guy's a big draw for you guys. He's from the Northeast, you know, Dave Branch. He's bringing a lot of people in, a lot of fans in. I'm like, if I do it, give me another shot. Dude, they never called me back. I still have a sour taste in my mouth. They never gave me another shot in Bellator.
Oh, wow.
Pretty bad, yeah.
Even to this day, you're happy where you are with World Series of Fighting?
Oh, I'm happy where I am. I will never fight for Bellator, ever.
Really?
Like, even if they wanted me to. Like, I don't, like, my manager doesn't want me to. I don't want to, like, if they were to even call us, I think I would say no.
Wow. Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, well, they didn't call back, so you had to hang on the regionals, racked up some wins, I guess.
Yeah.
And then you got on Strikeforce Challengers 18. What was it like working for Strikeforce for those couple fights?
Oh, man, Strikeforce was great. You know what I mean? And the UFC had just bought them, and, like, the behind-the-scenes promotions. I don't know what it was like before the UFC bought them, but it was phenomenal. You know what I mean? Everything ran smoothly. It was just an honor to be part of Strikeforce when it was still going on, and, you know, and being on Showtime and everything. It was definitely, like, the pinnacle of my career at that point. And I was super excited and super happy to be with them.
When you look back at those fights for Strikeforce, are you happy looking back? Because one was the last fight you had for Strikeforce was quite the bloody brawl for you. You had that awful cut. But looking back, do you look back and how do you look back at those fights is basically what I'm trying to get to.
I mean, I enjoy the memories. Like, that was my first fight with Strikeforce, was that bloody brawl with Roy Jones. But it was, man, that fight was exciting. I got a lot of compliments on that fight later that night, and people really enjoyed it. And I'll always remember that fight, dude. I was gushing blood, like, so bad. My coaches thought it was going to be stopped. It was
you know, I mean, it was just a fun fight, and it was exciting, so that was fun. And my last fight, you know, I mean, I still hold regrets for that. I feel like I could have done more against Deliante to win that fight, and probably if I would have done more, I'd probably be somewhere else in my career right now. So it's like a little bittersweet memory. I definitely am happy to be with Strikeforce, but I wish I would have won that last fight.
Now, this was during the Zuffa era of Strikeforce. Has anyone from Zuffa ever reached out to you to this day? Because now you're with World Series of Fighting, but before you got hooked up with World Series of Fighting, was there a call from Zuffa? Was there any interest?
You know, after I fought Viliante in my last fight and they were transferring everything over to the UFC, I was told I was setting up my travel arrangements for, like, the UFC Fighter Expo or whatever, like the yearly thing where they, you know, the fighter meeting or whatever it's called. And right before that, like, I was supposed to leave, like, a week later, they called me and said I was cut from the promotion. Because at the time, we thought we were getting transferred over to the UFC. Like, it looked like it was going to happen. And so the only contact I had with them, and I didn't have it, was my manager. They said, go get a couple wins and give us a call back. So,
okay, well, so how did the call from, you went back, you were on the regionals again, you went back to the Iowa Challenge again, had a fight there, you had a few other fights. When does the call from World Series of Fighting come along?
I think I won 3 fights, and then I think we contacted them. My manager had already talked to him, like, World Series of Fighting a long time ago was going to do, like, these 8-man tournaments for $1 million. Do you guys remember that at all? Like, they were talking
yeah.
about doing the 8-man tournaments. All right, so we had, like, kind of talked to him back then when they were first, you know, before they even had a show. A buddy of mine was signed with them, Jared Downing, like, to do one of those tournaments that never, like, came to fruition or whatever. So Mickey, to KO Dynasty, already had, like, a relationship with them. So after I won my 3rd fight, I was like, Mickey, dude, I need to be making better money than this. Like, let's do something. He's like, oh, let me call Ollie. He's, you know, he's signing a bunch of fighters right now. I think we can get you in right now. I'm like, sweet, let's do it. That's
all
how that
right.
happened.
So he makes the call. You're there. You make your debut. You're fighting a Gracie in your debut fight. And this happens. We'll be right back on the other side. This is about a 30-second clip from that fight.
Gave it a little whiplash, and boom, Derek Maimon had been waiting and waiting and hadn't been able to connect, and boy, did he ever connect.
Whoa. Thanks, bud.
Now that was a power punch and a solid cold knockout of Hollis Gracie.
Now, of course, that's Hollis Gracie. He's been around the world. He's part of a world-famous family. You got Boss Rudin sitting at ringside calling your fight. It's a big moment for you. What's that like when you got in there to make your debut for World Series of Fighting?
It was exciting, man. It was exciting. It was my first step back to the big stage from the local promotion. So it was, you know, I knew it was going to be on TV. I was super excited. I knew going in, like, Gracie was the favorite. I was probably brought in to lose, you know what I mean? Like, Gracie's the name. They're going to want to build him. And I was just, like, super ready, super excited to put on the upset, you know?
All right. One of my favorite moments from that, actually, is after you win, you can hear, you can't really hear what you said, but you hear Boss Rudin say, thanks, bud. What you did, you went around, you were very excited from the knockout. Of course, the flare flop knockout, as we like to call it, because, first of all, before I get to the Boss Rudin thing, when you hit him, did you realize that he was done? Because he was still standing in front of you. His hands were down. He turns around, and then the flare flop. When did you realize? Was it until Bill Bookwater, the referee, pulled you off? Or when did you realize that he was done?
Yeah, when the ref pulled me off, that's when I realized. I didn't know what was going on. Like, in my mind, everything was going slower than it was. I just, like, remember seeing him turn around and, like, walk away. And I was like, what is he doing? Like, I didn't know what – I didn't know if he was quitting or what had happened, but, like, I was just confused. And then when the ref stepped in and he was on the ground and he wasn't moving, I was like, you know what I mean? Obviously, I was excited and, like, yeah, and then a rush of emotions. But I had no idea what was going on. I didn't feel like I hit him that hard.
When you see it in real time, it doesn't look like it was much of a punch. Now, of course, if you punch me, I'd probably do the same thing Gracie did if I was still conscious. But the thing with, like you said, it didn't look like it. But when you see the slow motion, you're like, yeah, that really did connect. He really did nail the guy. But moving on from that, during your celebration, you said to Boss, you know, I love you, Boss. And what's that like? He's a legend, and he's there calling your fight, and that had to be something else. And I guess you just felt the moment, say hi to him, you know?
Yeah, for sure, dude. I was just so excited. I saw Boss Rutten, and, you know, I mean, Boss Rutten is a legend, and, you know, he's liver kick knocked people out. He's just, like, a badass in a fighter. So for me to knock someone out in front of him was really exciting, and I was just so happy to do it and so excited. I felt like I had to give him a shout-out. And, like, I guess I don't know if it's a funny story or not, but, like, he commentated my, like, the adrenaline MMA fight against Mike C. And he probably doesn't remember it at all, but my striking wasn't very good then. Like, I'm going to be honest, it kind of sucked, right? And I was trying to beat up Mike C on the feet, and it was working for a little bit, and then he ended up winning, but it wasn't pretty. And, like, Boston said some things, you know what I mean, like, just, like, commentating. So I was just super happy to get, like, a good, legit knockout in front of Boston, and it was awesome.
Now, your next fight for World Series of Fighting took place back in January. You were victorious by decision against Scott Barrett, and that leaves you now as the only undefeated heavyweight in World Series of Fighting. Now, my question is, what do you want to do? Do you want to have a title shot in World Series of Fighting? Or do you want to, you got your couple of wins now. Zuffa might be interested. You're on a 5-0 streak now. You have two wins for a major promotion. What's your plans right now?
Honestly, my plans are, like, World Series of Fighting, it's an awesome promotion, and I'm happy for everything they've done for me and, like, keeping me busy and getting me fights. But I'm not making the money I want to be making. You know what I mean? I have a kid, I have a fiance, I have a family to support, and the UFC is where the money's at. World Series of Fighting doesn't have very many heavyweights either. You know what I mean? It's who Dave Huckabee is 1-0, I'm 2-0. But after that, who? Andre Arlovski? So even if they put up a title fight, who else do they have to fight us? You know what I mean? Like, I haven't heard anything. I know Russo signed with him, but I haven't heard anything of him fighting anytime soon. Like, I just, you know, I feel like they're really focused on other weight classes. Like, 170 is really deep for them. You know, Steve Carl just fought Paul Harris. He's going to be fighting Fitch. Berkman's going to be fighting the winner of that. They just signed Melvin. Like, 55's deep for them. I guess my plan is to fight out my contract and go to the UFC. That's my plan.
Now, when you look at the UFC heavyweight division as it stands right now, after you get top five, do you see yourself fitting in there? Do you see yourself? I certainly can. I certainly can see you fighting for the UFC, but it's kind of a thin division right now for the UFC. You have Cain and Junior Dos Santos at top. You have the two guys fighting for the shot next. You have Radum and Omega. Who's Radum fighting? I forgot.
Brown.
You go. But after those four guys, it's a really thin division. I can certainly see you. When you look at the UFC heavyweight division, do you see yourself in the rankings?
Yeah, I mean, I see myself in the mix. Obviously, I'm going to come in, and I'm not going to be in the mix, but I just got to get my wins. I got to win my fights, then I'll be in the mix, you know what I mean, 2-3 fights in. And, like, Cain Velasquez, Junior Dos Santos are at the top of the division. Everywhere else is wide open, so it's like anybody's for the taking, and I feel like I have the capabilities and the style and the abilities to you know, take my chances and get right there in the mix of it and be top five in the UFC by 2015.
Now, what would your hypothetical, your dream fight, your first fight there, not really a dream fight, but your first fight there, realistically putting everything that you're a newcomer to UFC and all that, who would be the guy that you think would give you a name there? Would you want somebody like Roy Nelson? Who do you see yourself fighting there? First fight.
You're putting me on the spot. I guess like someone big like Roy Nelson or Nogueira would be a great first fight. I don't see that happening. Honestly, when I get in there, I see myself fighting like a Rose Holt. Jared's his name, right? Jared Rose Holt just got there. He beat some guy.
Yeah.
Beat some dude. Yeah, like that would probably be more realistically one of my first opponents, a guy like that. 1-0, 2-0. There's a Russian in there now, too, right? I'm really bad with names. I'm sorry. But
it's
I know there's a Russian in there, too, that's like he's 1-0 or something. I see myself fighting one of those guys. You know what I mean? But, like, one of those guys, too, they're, like, one or two wins away from all of a sudden they're fighting Verdum next or Brown. You know what I mean? Or Victor Silva, so.
Yeah. Now, I find it interesting that you used to fight at light heavyweight, and now you're fighting at heavyweight. What was driving that decision to go back up a weight class and what that you could make?
You know, light heavyweight, It was a cut for me, but it wasn't, like, I guess, a crazy cut. I just, towards the end, like, when I fought Viliante in Strikeforce, I'd already been talking to guys at ATT about moving to heavyweight and, like, trying to make that transition. I just felt like I would fit in better at the heavyweight division than I would the light heavyweight division. I mean, there's, like, a lot of quick, fast guys at light heavyweight, and I just felt like my style and my abilities fit in way better with the heavyweight division.
So you think that your speed's going to counteract the power of those big guys at heavyweight?
I think it's a mix. You know what I mean? I'm going to be honest with myself. I wasn't, like, the fastest light heavyweight. You know what I mean? There's a lot of faster light heavyweights. And I got power of a heavyweight, though. I already know I have the power of a heavyweight. So I got the speed, and I got the power for heavyweight. So that's where I feel like I fit in the best.
Cool. So, you know, you look back at your 22 fights. What do you think was your best fight in that mix?
Honestly, probably my last one. You know what I mean? My last one, I thought I was going to finish him in the first round, and I was really opening up with my hands, and I couldn't, and I had to gut through and finish the fight and keep, you know, and continue to win the fight after dominating the first round. So I was really pleased with my last performance.
Cool. So what are you working on now as far as your training? What are you focusing on?
Right now, conditioning and lifting, and we're going to get into the real heart of the camp here soon. I think I got a fight coming up June 21st, so right now we're just running and lifting and stuff.
Oh, well, who's your next fight against? Do you know that?
I don't think I'm supposed to say who I'm fighting next, but I can tell you that I'm fighting June 21st.
Okay. Where is that? Do you know the location? Is that back in Atlantic City or are they in Vegas again?
I think it's in San Jose, but I'm not 100% certain on that.
Okay, yeah, I'll look it up. I should have had that information. But, well, I didn't know you were fighting yet, so I guess
yeah,
I didn't
have
that information.
It, so I guess I might be in trouble for that, too.
Oh, well.
I guess I was just talking and not thinking, and all of a sudden I'm telling you what I'm doing. So,
well,
yeah,
I'll cut that part out for you then.
No, don't worry. All good. They won't be too
But you didn't give too much away. You just said that maybe. So,
yeah.
Chris, did you have anything else?
No, I was going to ask him about his next fight, so.
Oh, well, we can't talk about that, Chris.
Yeah, so I've been shut down, so.
Yes.
When is his next fight?
Hey, Dan, stay out of this. Now, Derek, where can people follow you on social media to find out more about you, to follow your career as you make that journey? I certainly see it happening as you make that journey to the UFC.
Well, thank you. They can follow me at Derek Maimon on Twitter.
And as I found out, it is M-E-H-M-E-N, not M-A-N.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. M-E-N.
Yes, Derek Maimon. So do you have anything else you want to give us? Any words of inspiration? Why do you keep on doing this? What are you looking to get out of all this? Do you want to create a legacy? Do you want to – what is this to you? What is fighting just everything? I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot looking for some words of inspiration, but what is this?
You're
what does it all
me,
mean?
You're going to hate me. There is no words of inspiration. I just don't see myself doing anything else. I swear to you, I feel like this is what I was meant to do. I wasn't meant to push papers or do construction. I was meant to punch people in the face. Like, that's what I was meant to do. That's what I'm doing.
That is why Derek Maimon was put on this earth, to punch people in the face. I couldn't say it any better. Make sure you check him out on Twitter, at Derek Meehman, and it's M-E-H-M-E-N. Derek, I want to thank you so much. It was great, and I hope we can get you on again, maybe after your next fight. We'll get you back and recap a few things with you. How's that?
Awesome. I appreciate it. Awesome. Yeah, definitely.
All right, and I'll talk to you soon, but thank you again for your time tonight.
All right, thank you. Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
You too, Nick.
You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down, tell him that God's gonna cut him down.
You know, Omega, guys that come out to Johnny Cash or have Johnny Cash tattoos, they certainly have a place in my heart.
I'm well aware of your Johnny Cash proclivities.
We should play that thing tonight.
What thing?
The 5-minute Johnny Cash retrospective.
Yeah, <right. laughs> I have another outro, Dan. So.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, I already have another outro. But that being said, Omega, we have some fights to discuss coming up Friday on Fight Pass. Sir, mm-hmm. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Coming from the Dew Arena in Abu Dhabi. That's in the UAE for those keeping track of such things. It's UFC Fight Night. And we got a big one at the top. Actually, it's not that big, but one of the individuals involved is rather large.
They're both fairly big boys.
Well, but Roy Nelson is, of course, the bigger of the two. Big Country! I didn't call him Big Rig this week.
That's good.
That's one for one so far, starting off on a new leaf. Now, Omega, this fight doesn't really mean much in the realm of things, does it?
Not. It really only means that the guy who wins gets to stay relevant in the rankings. That's about all I can say about it right now.
What are we going to look forward to here? Are we going to see a typical Roy Nelson keep it standing fight? Or perhaps are we going to see a Nogueira trying to get him down to the ground and submit him? I, of course, we've talked about this almost mythical Roy Nelson Brazilian jiu-jitsu game. He's a black belt. Everybody knows this, but we've rarely, if ever, seen it. How do you see this fight going?
You know, I think these are two guys that, you know, probably that have submission bases, but really fell in love with their striking. I think Nogueira's fell in love with his striking, and we know Nelson has. So, you know, I think this is going to be contested on the feet, and it's going to be, you know, I think that doesn't play well for Nogueira, because Nogueira doesn't really have the kind of elusivity and head movement that you would want out of a striker, who's certainly someone who's going to look to stand up. And
his chin is suspect of late, of course.
Of late, it has been suspect. But that may just be a more sign of age than anything.
Well, that's what I was going to go into. I mean, the guy has, what, 44 fights, it looks like, in his career. God knows how many more on the streets of Brazil.
Yeah.
I mean, the Televudo, those fights aren't sanctioned. They don't, you know, the old days of pit fighting pretty much in Brazil. I'm sure his career started before 99 is what I'm trying to get to. And years of fighting, let's take a look a little closer. He's been very win and lose since, we're talking UFC 81. with Sylvia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're talking there. Then lost to Mir, won against Couture, lost to Cain Velasquez, the current champion, beat Brendan Schaub, and of course he should have, lost again to Mir, beat Herman, the guy that BJJ does not work against, and lost to Radum. Now, if you just look at this like a roulette wheel, you would say, hey, bet on black, he's going to win this time.
Last time I checked, MMA is not
a roulette wheel.
Not a roulette wheel.
So where do you see this?
This is the interesting thing. Like I said, these two are going to stand up. Whether that's the smart thing or not, I think they're going to stand up. And you know, when it comes to that, you've got to get out of the first round with Roy Nelson, because once you get out of that first round, then Roy becomes tired. His cardio has been suspect for several fights now, all the way back to the fight with Kimbo Slice. You know, he just doesn't have the cardio. So if you get him in that deep water, there's a very good chance you can at least outpoint him, because you're probably not going to knock him out. You know, Big Nog's got power. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, Roy Nelson has like a stupid chin. He just doesn't.
Roy Nelson spent quite some time against Verdum, getting kneed in the face, getting punched in the face, kept coming back for more. I don't think that Nog has boxing to that level to actually put him out, unless he kind of stumbles him and jumps on top real quick. But I don't even see that happening.
Right. Well, I mean, you think about Roy Nelson's shin. You say, well, this is a guy that went three rounds with Junior Dos Santos.
Yeah.
Who punched him repeatedly, just frenetically and repeatedly. He just has a good shin. Now, eventually, that shin is going to fade. But I don't see Big Nog being that guy. And while Big Nog's waiting around for Roy Nelson to tire, Roy's going to be throwing bombs at him. And we know that Nelson has the kind of power that can knock anybody out. So I don't think this sets up well for Big Nog. I think for, if I'm looking at a pick here, I'm thinking picking Roy Nelson, because I think he's going to just wait. He's going to wing some punches out there, and one of them is going to get on Nogueira's chin, and it's going to put him out.
I have to agree. I'm going to pick Roy Nelson as well. There's not too much more I can say about it, just the fact it's a gut feeling, and I think that Roy is our guy for this one. Co-main events, Clay Guida hasn't done much lately, kind of still in that gatekeeper role, but he's taking on Kawajiri.
Katsuyuki Kawajiri from Japan.
Yeah, so where do you see this one? This is kind of an interesting fight.
Well, this is an interesting fight with an old guard Japanese fighter who hasn't lost in a long time, and certainly got the submission victory in his first outing in the UFC back in January. He looked okay in that thing, but this is a guy at 35 who has faced a lot of competition, and I don't know if he's going to be able to keep up with the pace that Guida can maintain for three rounds. Certainly Guida is that Energizer Bunny guy who just can't tire him out. So you know you're not going to do that. You think about the level of competition that Clay Guida has faced. He's fought some of the best in the world. He's won some and he's lost some, and he is that quintessential gatekeeper. But I'm not sure that Kawajiri at his age is going to be able to keep up with Guida. And you know, and quite frankly, I'm not his. Even though he got that victory over Sean Serrano, I didn't see enough out of that victory to let me think that Guida won't be able to get him down, pin him to the ground, and just keep him there for three rounds. So I'm going to pick Guida in this fight.
I'm going to pick Guida as well. I've always liked Guida. I like his style. I hope he doesn't bob and weave quite as weirdly as he normally does. It's very off-putting. But he has cardio that goes for days, so... maybe it will work. Now, the next one's a welterweight fight. John Howard taking on Ryan LaFlair. Now, LaFlair is undefeated in his career. He's undefeated, of course, if I say in his career. He's also undefeated in UFC. He is a veteran of the New Jersey-based Ring of Combat. And his last fight, he beat Court McGee. Where do you see this one? This is an interesting fight.
Yeah, you know, the fights I've seen of Ryan LaFleur, that certainly that last fight against Court McGee, he looked good to me. He looked like a guy who could be a contender in the future. And so I was impressed with him, even though I think Court McGee got the better of him in that first round of his fight. Going up against John Howard, who's a guy that, you know, he's a decent wrestler. He's got some power in his hands. Doesn't fight very excitingly, though. He's had a couple of decision victories. He did beat Uriah Hall, so, you know, as highly touted as Uriah Hall at least was, that was at least a good feather in his cap, certainly in his UFC career. And beating a guy like Sayer Bahadzadeh was certainly is another feather in his cap, but it just wasn't that exciting, and he didn't really do anything in those fights to impress me in the UFC. I think LaFleur's probably got more skills, got a more well-rounded game, and is going to be able to overcome John Howard, his wrestling, mm-hmm. and be able to just outpoint him for three rounds. So I'm going to pick LaFleur in this fight.
All right. Now, looking at the rest of the card, I do see Rochelt. How do you say it?
Rochelt.
Okay. I was right.
Yeah.
Usually I say a name that sounds wrong to myself, and I double guess.
And then I correct you.
But this time I was correct, Omega.
Victory is yours.
A feather in the cap of credibility. Now, we heard from Meeman. He said this is one guy he could see himself fighting. Now he's taking on. You're going to have to take that one.
That's a good. That's going to be a hard one for me too. Omelanchuk, I think.
Just say Smith or Jones.
Danny Boy.
Danny Boy in the preliminaries. Where do you see this one? Or do you even have an opinion on it? Because he's taking on someone that we're not familiar with, quite frankly.
Yeah. I'm not too familiar with Omelanchuk. That was last time he fought in UFC. That was when we were at the Hell in a Cell meetup. We only got to see the main event. So I didn't get to see his preliminary bout in that case. I did see Rochelt, though. I was impressed with him. So I think he's got some talent. I think, certainly got power. And I think we're going to see him take it by TKO in round two.
Anything else on this card that people should pay attention to?
I think that how is Rani Yahya going to do at bantamweight? He's a decent fighter, but has had very mixed results in the UFC. And then Talis Latus at middleweight fighting Trevor Smith could be interesting with his he's on a five fight winning streak, and he's got really, really suffocating top game. So we'll see how that goes. But I mean, none of those fights are critical for the rankings.
Yeah.
But you know, hey, it's on TV. It's on Fight Pass, I should say. So
yeah, this is a Fight Pass exclusive. Pretty much the only reason to get Fight Pass is to get... Well, no, I can't say that, because they are opening up their library. Of course, just days before the streak was broken, Brock Lesnar's entire UFC career was put out. I smell conspiracy. Yeah. However...
Yeah. It's a plot.
However, moving right along, it is on Fight Pass. It is one of the international cards. Now, for a free fight night, that will be coming up next Wednesday as we are on air. You're going to see Bisping and Kennedy. These two guys don't like each other. Your thoughts very quickly. I don't want to pick, just your thoughts, Omega, going into this one.
Yeah, there's been a lot of trash talked between Bisping and Kennedy. And, both these guys are looking for a signature win in the middleweight division. And I think, Bisping certainly is a guy. Coming off injury needs a statement, needs to really prove that he deserves his spot at middleweight. And certainly, with the middleweight division opening up since the Anderson Silva's loss to Chris Weidman, really an opportunity for Bisping to step up. But Kennedy also, in that top 10, a win over Bisping catapults him into the conversation for a future title shot. So it's a big fight for both these guys.
Certainly, certainly. And, of course, the co-main event is the finals, I suppose, of the Ultimate Fighter Nations that's been going on, if you've been paying attention to that. Patrick Cote, I didn't even know he was still around, taking on Kyle Noke.
Kyle Noke, and these are the coaches. So.
Yeah, so, okay.
So, yeah,
I'm excited.
Nope. Well, you know, I like Patrick Cote. You know, I always thought Patrick Cote was a good fighter. He just lost, but he's got some pretty good hands. Kyle Noke's a submission guy, and he's had some mixed success over the years. He was I would probably characterize him as almost out of the UFC until they started doing this international expansion. He could possibly, you know, he turned that into a coaching spot. So. You know, his losses to Ed Herman and Andrew Craig were not impressive, but, you know, his submission is pretty good. And you know, we saw he was pretty much a standout in Elite XC. One of those guys they tried to hang their hat on before they folded. So, you know, it's Patrick Cote and Kyle Noke. I'm not terribly excited for it. It doesn't mean a lot, but hey, it should be a good fight. So,
I think the sleeper on this card, besides the main event, I think the main event will live up to, actually, there's a couple of fights. Sam Stout, KJ Nunes, I think will be really good. Both guys have a lot to prove, I'd say. And Sarah Kaufman making her return to the octagon. Actually, looking at this card with more open eyes, and it gives us something to talk about next week as well, is that this card really has the potential to be a good one. Your thoughts looking at the rest of that card?
Yeah, I think... you know, think about this. It could be a good card, but I mean, the Sarah Kaufman fight. She's looking for an opponent because Leslie Smith's out.
Oh.
She was supposed to fight Amanda Nunes. She's out.
Oh.
So yeah, we're still looking for that fight. I guess Leslie Smith is the replacement. So that should be a good fight because they had a good fight in Invicta. So, you know, that should be a good fight. Yeah, overall, the card has some sleepers on here. You know, you think about guys like Dustin Poirier, and as you said, Sam Stout. Could be a good fight. Mark Bocek, you know, he's had some decent fights.
And the world's tallest bantamweight, George Roop.
George Roop, who probably definitely, Roop's got a lot to prove.
Every fight we ever talked about, he always has something to prove.
He's always something to prove. But you know, it's funny how he manages to stay in the UFC, but he's still there, and he's coming off a loss, so I gotta believe he needs a win. I really do. But
we'll see. It should be an exciting card. It's on Fox Sports 1 next Wednesday night.
Off to do double duty next Wednesday.
Yeah, you'll be doing the double duty, but right now I'm not doing double duty. I'm about ready to gear up, and when we come back, we're going to finish up our WrestleMania discussion, and we're going to talk about CZW Best of the Best. That's coming up this Saturday from Voorhees, New Jersey, but we'll be back after Gear Up by the Mystery Men.
Cheer Up by the Mystery Men here on HIAC Talk Radio. Buy their album. It's not that other name anymore. It's just the initials. I've got to remember that.
Yes, you do.
Buy their album, $9, lucha-rock.com, Musica Enmascarada.
Yes. The way you said it, though, if you didn't bring a focal point onto it, it was, hell, it's HIAC Talk Radio.
Hell, it's HIAC Talk Radio.
Hell,
whatever.
With it. Now, I want to continue our WrestleMania discussion, and to do that, I can think of no other man to bring on but the great Harry Barnett. Here he is. Harry. Well, is that you, Harry? I'm pretty sure it's you.
It is great to be here on HIAC Talk Radio, Dan.
H.
I love the way you say H. Almost as much as you like the way I say the great Harry Barnett. Harry, how are you?
I'm doing great, Dean. How are you doing?
Of course you're doing great, because it's great to be Harry Barnett. Now, Harry, we already talked about the impact of the Ultimate Warrior. Did you want to share anything about the Ultimate Warrior's legacy, respectfully?
Well, for one, I don't know. Well, first of all, it is great to be here on the Dean Dixon and Omega show. That background laughter there, I don't know what that's all about, but...
Hey, really?
We're testing a new laugh track.
Yeah, it sounded awful, but anyway. I don't know how much you guys actually paid attention to Warriors outside of WWE stuff over the past few years, but... That promo that he did on Raw and, you know, a little bit of his speech at the Hall of Fame, it sounded a lot more Ultimate Warrior than anything in the last few years actually did. Like, he sounded very, if to say that it was almost like two different people. The guy that was at WWE sounded like the Ultimate Warrior. The guy who's been the last few years sounded like just a man. If this makes sense. I'm not just rambling.
No. I definitely agree with that. I think he was in a very good place. I think he appreciated the fact that WWE came to terms with his legacy and, you know, made up for the wrongs of that DVD. And I think it was a great moment. Moving on. Did you have something to add?
Real quickly, nothing. I have an actually legit question, Harry. All these reports thank you. All these reports where people were saying that he looked bad. Am I the only one that doesn't agree with that?
My opinion?
50-50.
Dean, you go for... Yeah, go ahead. Anybody, whoever wants to... Because I don't agree that he looked that terrible.
My opinion, he was clutching his chest in the ring when you go back and watch that during his promo. He was getting out of breath, and he wasn't really yelling or anything during his Hall of Fame speech. He had a lot of trouble walking. I didn't realize, because we didn't see him walk much the Hall of Fame. But when he walked down that aisle and... Everybody leading up to this, we're like, I think Chris even said it last week, we wanted to see him run down to the ring and shake the ropes one last time. And after seeing what shape he was in, it wasn't going to happen, you know? Did you feel that way, Chris? And then, Harry, I'll get to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did see... Well, I mean, let's face it, we saw a 54-year-old man who beat up his body for... a decade. I mean, what did you expect? I mean, when he came out in the Hall of Fame, I think there was a mental switch. I think it went on a lot of people's brains and said, okay, and he even said it, you know, even though they were chanting one more match, when he said no more match, I was like, he can't do it. And then, you know, and then on Raw, when he walked down to the ring, and then he tried to shake the ropes, and he was just struggled with it. You could tell. I mean, this isn't the Ultimate Warrior. This is Warrior.
Yeah.
This is the vessel that channeled the Ultimate Warrior, but this is not the same body we used to see.
Yeah, so. I mean, And it really gives you pause because we're fans of wrestling and we love what these guys do. And even, you know, I'm close with a few wrestlers and I know the toll that these matches take on that. And he wasn't even a high impact guy when you think about it. He wasn't like going through tables. And what I mean by that, just he wasn't going through tables. He wasn't really taking high risk bumps. He really was just wrestling. And it's just sad when I saw him that broken down. And I commented to Marion, we were watching Raw together, and I said, he can barely walk. He's having trouble getting down those steps.
Maybe I just didn't notice it because I was just, maybe I was just so excited more than I thought it would be to actually seeing him coming out there that I just didn't notice it. And I haven't gone back. The only thing I've gone back to watch was the speech inside the ring at Raw. I didn't watch the walk down to the ring or anything, so I haven't rewatched any of this.
Yeah.
But just going on memory, thinking about his entrance from the Hall of Fame, he was walking real slow, but I really didn't notice it when he came out on Raw.
Well, he had his girls at the Hall of Fame, which I think masked a lot of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, when he comes out, he came out with the towel and the water.
The water, yeah.
And I was thinking, well, I mean, I know it could just be sweat and the lights and the kind of stuff, but I thought it was more than that. You know, in the back of my mind, I thought it was more than that. And
I sweat so much, I didn't even think of it.
You know, well, yeah, and that's why I dismissed it. Because it's like, okay,
sweat so much.
Well, no, because, yeah, exactly.
Well, Lesnar sweats a lot.
Lesnar sweats a lot. Yeah, he was dripping at that WrestleMania. But, you know, and then you think, but in this whole thing, this whole discussion about Warrior leads me back to Taker and how old he looked.
Yeah.
And you know, how much of a toll has wrestling taken on his body that he only tries to go once a year, and he's really kind of did this once a year thing seemingly out of obligation.
Yeah.
You know, he just felt he had to do it.
Yeah. It, when you think about it, it really has. Ever since I always said years ago, I think it's probably on a tape or in the cloud or whatever you want to say on the Tony Lane show where I said he should get the 20-0 and leave, get the 20-0 and retire,
I remember you saying it.
Now, Harry, I just want your thoughts. We've talked about a lot of things, and we really haven't gotten back to you, but just your thoughts on his condition going into this, what you thought.
Well, I knew at this point, you know, expect something. You know, it's the fact that it is The Undertaker, you know, don't put him down. Expect something, but don't expect as much as you have in the past few years. Or in fact, in the past, and as it was going on, I'm not going to lie, I actually fell asleep during WrestleMania, but it just wasn't the same. It just wasn't the same.
Yeah, but Harry, your thoughts on WrestleMania? We already talked, of course, about the streak. What were your thoughts of the streak ending? Do you like it? Do you think it's a good idea?
No, but I didn't think it was a good idea, but I'm not as against it as everyone else is. I mean, probably the one thing that I have against it is the fact that, okay, yeah, it's the Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar, we're all presuming, is now gone again for a few months. So you ended the streak for a guy who's going away again. Right, okay. What was the point in that? That's my only problem with it.
He's a legitimate fighter, and if Undertaker was good for it, then I think we should be good for it.
Oh, yeah, but that's my only objection,
okay,
the fact that Brock will be gone the night after WrestleMania. That's the last time you see him for a while.
Is this is that basically what's happening? Because I haven't read that. I don't doubt you.
That's what I'm presuming. That's what I'm presuming.
But if you look at that promo and then the fact that Heyman was hooked up with another guy, Cesaro later on Raw. I think it was to keep Heyman relevant.
I need to go back and look at that.
I mean, the biggest...
You do need to go back and look
I think
at
the biggest winner of the streak, the biggest winner of WrestleMania was Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he gets hooked up with the hottest guy on the roster besides that, that's not named Daniel Bryan at this point, because Cesaro, we'll get into this in a minute, but Cesaro had a great WrestleMania, winning that Battle Royal, and of course, in the pre-show match, he looked like a million bucks. So, wow. I'm just not sure where I was going with that, but that's where I was going. They are keeping Paul Heyman relevant by giving him Cesaro, and it was kind of like a goodbye. He broke the streak. He'll come back and conquer again.
Yeah.
Preferably, what I'd like to see is Brock come back, and I'm going to get, you know, whatever for this, but Brock come back, kill Daniel Bryan, keep that title until WrestleMania next year, and have Roman Reigns ascend. That way, Bryan gets his nice little title run. He'll get his Rey Mysterio streak. People can be happy, and then people can be extremely pissed that Brock Lesnar not only beat the streak, but he's the guy who killed Daniel Bryan.
I'm actually fine with that.
And then Roman Reigns ascends. Yeah, Roman Reigns ascends at WrestleMania next year. So SummerSlam, if it's not Brock against Bryan, I don't know what else you throw up there, because I don't like any of the other matches unless it's Cesaro.
You know, you got to think, you got to start pushing Brock here for a title. Now, what else can you do with him? He broke the streak.
I thought he was going to come out and Extreme Rules, you were going to go that quick and just have him dominate until next year's WrestleMania. But if he's gone until SummerSlam, then why not then?
Is it SummerSlam, or is it maybe Survivor Series? Because you wonder how long they're going to play out Batista and Daniel Bryan and maybe Randy Orton.
Not long at all.
we can pray, but that's...
I'm hearing that they might go with something along the lines of not a War Games, but similar with Hell in a Cell. I must call it HIAC, but with Hell in a Cell.
You must pull the hose in there like Dan did.
Yeah, the Silver Dome. But it's just one of the. I don't know where they're going. Bryan needs a contender, and there's certainly not a lack of them, but. People for years have been talking about the youth movement. We saw that on Raw with a lot of debuts and a lot of vignettes. Bo Dallas is ready, apparently. We're going to have Adam Rose soon. Paige won the Divas title her first night there. So,
hold on, wait. Where's Paige from? Where's Paige from again?
England, I believe, Harry.
Thank you.
What, did you know her or something?
No.
Then shut up.
Well, no, he has that patriotism. There's nothing wrong with that. But Harry,
I guess not.
Harry,
Gene.
I'm just trying to think. Just kind of wrap up WrestleMania. Your thoughts? You said you fell asleep. Your thoughts on WrestleMania before I let you go, because I want to move on.
Well,
and it's not you. It's just I just want to move on.
Well, I blame Dan, don't worry. I'll actually agree with a tweet. Shut up, Dan. I'll agree with the tweet you put out, Dean. It was the best one since 17. 17, I've made no secret, was actually my favorite WrestleMania of all time. And it was, yeah, exactly. And it was my favorite one since then. I mean, I fell asleep through the highly complained about Cena versus Bray Wyatt, and then I obviously woke up during the streak match. But no, it was everything that it was. I mean, the hype was terrible, but then the show was brilliant. It was worth it, and now coming out of it, you know, like I was talking to someone earlier on, it's made a fan out of several people again. It's just a good time to be a wrestling fan, you know?
I can agree with that, Harry. And I agree with the fact that it's easily a top five WrestleMania. If not, it might be... X7 is so good, though. Just everything with X7 was so good. It's probably the second best WrestleMania of all time. Do we agree with that?
Maybe.
Anyway?
Actually, I don't. But that's okay.
Very well.
That's okay, well, Maggie.
I need to be contrary, I guess.
Two or three, sir.
Why don't you agree with that? What would you say is a better WrestleMania?
I don't know. Look, I don't have like one I can talk like. Lay out there because I just don't have that encyclopedic knowledge of WrestleManias. I just felt that as I watched it, that you know after the Battle Royal, it kind of started going downhill for me. I thought the Bray Wyatt John Cena match was somewhat disappointing. I thought you know and quite frankly the Taker streak thing just took the air out of everything. It just sucked the air out of the event, and you know, and granted that was probably purposeful, but that was just it was wow, and you know, and if to think if Daniel Bryan hadn't gone over in the main event, what would we be saying about this event? I mean,
I would have said that's the perfect WrestleMania if Batista did win at that moment I was saying after. You know what? It's a bizarro world we're in. Might as well embrace it. I actually saw a tweet. I retweeted it. Said, go ahead, Vinny. Give me the bizarro finish. Let Batista go over. I thought that would have been, at that point, so ballsy. It would have
It would have been ballsy, I mean, God. I mean.
And then on Raw, I thought they dropped the ball. They should have had Batista walk out on Raw with the title. That would have been another moment for me. I would have just been like, oh my God, they did it. They pulled the trigger. But what
I wouldn't be surprised if he does if he gets a SummerSlam so he can take him to the red carpet for Guardians of the Galaxy and all that.
That's true too. It's nice to have that title when you that's a very good point, Harry. So maybe my Brock Lesnar ideas might be put on hold.
Look, I don't want
Harry. No, I hope
Harry
was like,
if Harry would just learn to use the mute button when he coughs, he'd be perfect.
Hey, I have been.
Yeah.
Harry, where can the fine people find you? As I know you did something with Damian Dragon this week. Go ahead, let people know about that.
Well, I actually recorded a podcast with Damian Dragon tonight. We talked about WrestleMania, The Ultimate Warrior, superhero movies, and, of course, everything that Damian does. /has done. You can find me at Instant Classic H on Twitter. You can find this Damien podcast, which I am entitling "The Return of the Dragon," at iTunes. You can either it is, and he found it funny, and clearly Dan does too.
it's original.
You can find the show on Twitter by searching any keywords such as Damian Dragon, Damian Vargas, my name, The Great Harry Bonnet, or just Harry Bonnet, What's Wrong with Wrestling, Return of the Dragon, any sort of keyword that clues into that. Search the bowling alley while you're there. Dean, thanks for having me on.
Harry, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for your perspective. I certainly do appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
You're welcome.
Good day,
Dean.
Good day, Harry. Now, for another perspective of someone who went down to New Orleans and witnessed this, he is my co-host on After Midnight every third Friday at 11:59 p.m. He'll be with us right after this.
Said I love her forevermore. But the trouble is I tell the same old story to every girl that walks through the door. You was a slicker talking at your honey. Well, first they love me and then they don't. Sometimes they do it and sometimes they won't. So I said to this girl, hey, you get out. And she got to her feet and began to shout. You a dinosaur bro, a dinosaur bro. And you're always lying to your friends. You're a dinosaur bro, a dinosaur bro, and you never get nothing in the end.
talking about, lady. Since I'm talking to you, I don't do nothing but tell the truth.
He is second only to Matt Tremont for the longest intro on HIAC Talk Radio. It is none other than MLJ. He is a ring announcer for so many promotions, I don't feel like reciting them all. How are you here tonight, Emil, and how was WrestleMania?
Man, I am good. I am happy to be home, but I still wish I was in New Orleans, because let me tell you what, that place is one of the top, like, freaking top four places I've been to in my time on this great earth. Bourbon Street is, like, a heaven for derelicts. It is my favorite thing in the world. Like, there are just bars and strip clubs and freaking everything all over the place. And it's great. And you can drink in the streets. You can take stuff wherever you want, out of this bar, into this one, all night long. So good.
Bourbon Street is just insanity. Just insanity.
Yeah.
And probably on a Tuesday. It's just insane.
We were out until like 6 in the morning on a Thursday night. On a Thursday night, man. So good. Anyway, yes, WrestleMania. WrestleMania was happening, a very memorable WrestleMania. The best one of all time? No, I don't agree to all these folks out here that are saying,
I said second.
WrestleMania ever.
Second best.
I think it's in the area of top 5 to top 10, somewhere in there.
Second.
I'm just messing with you, Emil.
So get your number two. I want to know your number two. Before we move on, get your number two. Mr. Historian, come on.
Right now, WrestleMania.
I can't think of it,
man. No. Look, like, because I don't have, like, a strict, like, ranking thing right now. But, like, as far as WrestleMania that I prefer to WrestleMania 30, up there in the list are 8, 17, 19, 20,
and
24, I think it is.
20 was overbooked, though. Let's be honest.
Well, so, I mean, yeah, but...
Anyway, let's get back to WrestleMania. I'm sorry, Emil.
The four-way tag was freaking awesome. Cesaro, at that point, I could tell, like, the four-way tag gimmick. What do I call it, a four-man?
I'm sorry, what?
It's four, four, two, four, six, the, eight.
The four-way tag.
Yeah.
The freaking four-way tag. Cesaro was super, super duper over. And from that point, I was like, man, I'm really happy about this. Little did I know how over he would get within the next 26 hours of his life. Like, that is phenomenal. The few spots in the Battle Royal, which were awesome, between Kofi defying all things that are possible in human life, and as well as Cesaro by picking up freaking the Big Show and dumping him out there, and the pop that he got was freaking insanity in there. That was one of the few high spots that the crowd actually had that night, because it was kind of like, it wasn't as live as it was the past 2 years, man. Like, at least, like, where I was, the crowd wasn't as hype for whatever reason. I thought the opening segment was cool, like, when Austin came out. Like, I popped because, like, Austin is, like, my favorite. He's, like, my favorite wrestler not named Arn Anderson or Jerry Lawler right now. So that was really awesome. Let's see.
What about the streak? Tell me about the attitude, the atmosphere in that place when the streak was broken.
Well, I'll give you the whole nine yards here. The match sucked, okay?
Disagree.
Like, no, that match was freaking horrid.
Disagree.
It wasn't good. I agree with Emil.
Disagree.
Greatest match ever.
I almost fell asleep.
It's easily in the top. It's easily a top 20 WrestleMania match. Moving on.
Oh, my God. You are high on angel dust, you freaking goof. Like, no way.
Look,
no
we'll debate this on the next After Midnight. We have a topic now. But moving along, what was it like when the goddamn Brock Lesnar pinned? That's all I want out of you right now, Emil.
Okay. When
I don't
want to
know
Lesnar...
about the hooker.
No, there was no hooker. She was a nice girl. Anyway.
That was her boyfriend.
Stop it, Dan. I want to know about the damn atmosphere. Please, Emil.
Okay. So, here's what happened. One, two, three. A second and a half goes by before I think anybody realizes what actually just happened. After that second and a half, I immediately start laughing hysterically because at this point, the looks on people's faces are just so funny to me. Like the looks of shock and literal sadness on their face. Like these are grown men with title belts that are sad. and just the looks on their faces. And me, I'm loving it because I just witnessed history. If there's any person to do it right now, it should be Brock Lesnar. And I know there's that whole, like, oh, why do you give it to a part-time guy? Well, freaking Taker's the most part-timiest guy on the freaking roster.
Exactly.
What's it really matter? And it's not like Vince is like, oh, we're going to put Brock over. No, it's more so Taker's like, I'm giving it to Brock. And Vince is like, okay. And that's how that conversation went.
Most likely.
That's the
I agree
thing
with that
was missed. Everybody's been... I've seen a lot of people on the internet saying, well, Vince must have told... Nobody told Undertaker what was happening, okay? Nobody said, hey, Undertaker, we're doing this, and he was like, I don't want to do that, and they did it anyway. I guarantee you that.
I would guess in November or December of the past couple of years, there is a phone call to Death Valley from Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes something like this. Hey, Taker, you coming back this year? Yeah, I think I could do it one more time. And I think that's how the conversation goes. If he came back after last year, they would have been like, oh, cool, great, you're coming back. I think it's one of those things. I don't think it's planned. If he does come back, yeah, we'll have the Undertaker match, and that's great. I think even now, if he came back, I don't see why he would at this point, but if he did, great. If not, I think they can move on. And he's always said he's just going to be a guy that walks off into the sunset. And he did.
Man has nothing else to prove. I mean, what else is he going to do at this point?
I think leaving WrestleMania next year with all the titles. Do it. Just give him a gauntlet match. Oh, here comes...
Chokeslam pin, Hell's Gate, tap out. Last ride pin.
Just like you're defending the streak on 2K14. Now, Emil, so that had to be a huge moment. What about Brian? Did the place come unglued, or was it a little odd after the Undertaker thing? How bad did you feel for the Divas? Just the atmosphere after that and trying to get on with the rest of the show.
Man, you know what? Like, for what that was, like, I didn't hate it. Like, I was... You know, I felt bad for him because, like, nobody, like, really cared. But I liked when Eva Marie was just like, oh, who are you, Tamina Snuka? oh, you're the unstoppable woman. Let me just shove you on your ass. That was awesome. That was like one of my high spots of the evening. Eva Marie just ruining Tamina Snuka's reputation.
Admittedly, I was making coffee during that match.
Yeah, it's fine. Like I left during the Bray Wyatt Cena match because like whatever.
That was bad. Once it started,
I'm just like, I'm gonna go get my ridiculously overpriced program that I get every year. That is literally the same book with like 10 different pages in it every year. But I don't care. It's a commemorative keepsake. So whatever.
But what about when Brian gets the final three there, Emil? What was it like being part of that crowd?
As Michael Cole would say, it is electric.
Yeah.
They shot so much confetti. The amount of confetti that shot out of the air cannons was mind-boggling. I reached in the air and caught one piece of yellow confetti, and I held it with me the entire rest of the night until we got back to the hotel. I just held it in the air between my pointer finger and thumb. And people were like, oh, what'd you think of WrestleMania? And I was like, I have confetti. And you can't take it. And you can't take that away from me. Nobody tried. So there's that.
Nobody tried. I have confetti.
Nobody
now,
tried.
Very briefly, Emil, because we are running out of time.
Jesus.
The next night, I want to hug you right now, Emil. I just want to give you a man hug.
I want to buy him a drink.
Yeah. Well, he'd probably appreciate the drink more. But
no, I like it.
The next night on Raw, Daniel Bryan comes out for the opening segment. What's that like? Again, electric minus the confetti?
Oh, my God. The amount of confetti was only rivaled by the amount of yes chants the next day. Almost unlike anything else I've been a part of within the past few years, wrestling-wise, if only because the yes chants were so prominent 2 years ago in Miami, and there were more people in Miami than New Orleans in either the Silver Dome or the Smoothie King Center. And yes, that was a shot at the Hulkster. So,
wrap it all up for me, Emil.
Man, it was great. Best week of my freaking life. I want to go back immediately. I want to eat alligator sausage meat again. It was all so much freaking fun, even though I don't think it was one of the best WrestleMania of all time. I think it was one of the most memorable. I'm happy I was there. I'm happy with the people I was with. I'm happy of all the other shows I took in. I was happy about Bourbon Street. Freaking life is great, man. Everything's wonderful. I love you guys. This is the best.
MLJ, I will see you soon.
Man.
I will see you soon, Emil. You have a good night, and
right.
I can't wait for our next edition of After Midnight. It's coming up in 10 days, Emil, so be ready for that as we debate the top 10 WrestleManias of all time.
Okay, let's
maybe.
Do it.
Maybe not, but maybe we'll debate that Brock Lesnar match, and I'll tell you why you are so wrong about that, Emil. Just so wrong about the storytelling, the entire story, Emil. Second to none. But you have a good night, Emil.
Ah, you too.
He's a man who certainly, once he gets out what he has to say, he wraps it up in a nice little bow. You too. That's all I need. That's all I want.
And goodbye.
Now, we haven't had a chance to talk about that horrid John Cena-Bray Wyatt match.
What's my bother?
Dan, what'd you think of that?
I was really underwhelmed.
I would agree, Omega, very quickly.
Yeah, I was disappointed in it. I'd hoped for a better match, and the mind games just got old after a while.
Oh, it was... It was the same story we saw Kane and John Cena. It was a recycled storyline. It was bad. Bad.
But pretty much all storylines are recycled. So.
Well,
that's not necessarily a thing.
Granted, but I'm just saying it was.
But it wasn't good. It wasn't executed well.
No, and Cena going over just doesn't make much sense to me.
No, I agree with that.
That the underwhelming that happened, that was more upsetting than Undertaker losing by far.
I wouldn't go that far. But, yeah.
I said so, and it was the worst WrestleMania ever. I don't even agree with you.
Well, I'm just saying, in the realm of things, it was just that could have been a springboard for Bray Wyatt that wasn't properly executed, and I don't know where the Wyatts go from here.
Well, when you juxtaposition that against the WrestleMania that Cesaro had,
oh my God!
You know, you gotta think Bray Wyatt got shafted in this a little bit.
Now let's talk about Cesaro. Of course, his entire weekend. Well, starting with WrestleMania, frankly. Not much happened at the Hall of Fame for Cesaro. But at WrestleMania, he was in one of the better matches to open up the show. The Battle Royal became memorable simply because of him winning. Wasn't even announced. I was a little disappointed that there wasn't... there were 27 guys announced, and I thought there would be a special... You know, whether it was the Warrior or whether it was Hogan, whether it was somebody else of that nature, you had The Rock, you had Stone Cold, you know, the three guys that opened it up, why don't they go out there and kick some patooties on the Battle Royal? It's a somewhat safe environment. But no, none of that happens. Cesaro's in there, he gets down to the final four, and I'm like, But Big Show's still in there.
Yeah.
Big Show was the favorite. Still, he picks him up and throws him over the top. Great night, great pop for him. The next night, he's a Heyman guy. So, Chris, you first. Just Cesaro's coming, I guess. Finally, he's arrived.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is great. I think Cesaro, I've been a fan. I've been a fan of his moveset. I think his strength is unreal. I mean, the amount of air that Kofi Kingston got on that move was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, and let's give credit to Kofi for that save, and that he keeps doing that, and that he was willing to let Cesaro just basically launch him from the ring.
Yeah.
It is impressive. But Cesaro, getting back to Cesaro, he had his Andre the Giant moment.
Yeah.
And that was fantastic. Then coming out the next day, and you know, the crowd has been behind him for weeks now. But to finally have that turn to for him to end up with Paul Heyman, is fantastic. And, you know, he's got I want him to finish up with Jack Swagger as soon as possible because I want him.
Oh, sure.
I want him moving on to something more. Maybe one of these, NXT guys could give him a challenge. You know, that'd be pretty impressive, but that may be a step backwards. Certainly, he should be fighting for a title at this point.
The impressive thing, before I get to you, Dan, about Cesaro going into last year, having those matches on NXT with Sammy, and having some really these kind of under the radar moments, the best two out of threes falls, and then of course on Arrivals, he had another great match with Sammy. You're watching this and you're saying, when are they going to pull the trigger on Cesaro? When are they going to pull the trigger? I like the Real Americans. I am kind of a closet Swagger fan.
Not anymore.
No, I still am. I like Swagger, but the thing is, I was waiting for them to, you know, give them a tag team title run and then the breakup. So Cesaro would have some type of momentum going forward. But that all said, a great weekend for Cesaro, and due time. Dan, your thoughts?
I am so glad. I just didn't think it was going to happen because the last couple of weeks we had been talking about how they were going to hold off on pulling triggers, and when he won that battle royal, and Monday night, I was so ecstatic when he announced he was a Paul Heyman guy. I couldn't be happier. Almost to what you were saying, Dean, yeah, I was kind of a closet, quote-unquote, real swagger American fan. Swagger fan. Him and Ziggler, I wish they were further up, both of them. I feel that way about both of them, and the fact that they're pushing.
I think the Ziggler train has pulled out from the station.
Oh, I was watching the post show on network and saw him wrestling against Ryback. I said, "Oh boy."
I think that train has pulled. You know, but the good thing is, in a few months or, you know, 6-7 months, whenever he's up for contract again, we'll be able to see former WWE star Dolph Ziggler in action.
Yeah, he'll be
on the independent circuit. So
Global Force Wrestling or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Use the force, Jeff.
WrestleMania, I thought, was great. The only misfire I thought was the Cena and Wyatt match. Just,
I think they really missed an opportunity with the Shield and that squash match. But
that was so weird too. It was just like, okay,
yeah, okay, here. Well, hey, we're still the Shield, you know.
Yeah, but the Shield, I think they're, I don't know, they're involved in this whole Daniel Bryan thing now, which is interesting, but not sure if it's good for them to be involved against, I guess they're rubbing elbows with Batista and Orton and everybody, so I don't know.
I mean, they're in the main event. I mean, are they going down the path of reforming Evolution and then...
I would actually like to see, my friend.
I wouldn't mind seeing it either, quite frankly. You know, just the three of them, or do they bring back Flair?
Bring back Flair as a mouthpiece / manager, and I'll be happier than anything in the world. And, hey, just have them, they have all the power on their side, but they just get one up by these young guys. It's a great story.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I mean, it works for me. I mean, if you have to keep Batista around, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So WrestleMania, the weekend, sadly it came to an end with the news of Warrior passing away, but life has to go on, and... On the flip side of everything, things are interesting in WWE again. We really didn't talk too much about the NXT arrival of all these guys, Bo Dallas, Adam Rose. That Rusev guy that I don't care about, and I never will.
Rusev.
Whatever.
Alexander. I care about her, though.
Rusev.
I could care less
about
either.
I thought he looked good.
Berlin all over again.
And I don't even like power guys, but I liked him.
Yeah, I just... Yeah.
We will never agree on anything. That's what I determined.
Well, no, I think we're both excited. We're Bo Leavers, I believe, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can get behind Bo, I guess.
Yeah, so Bo Dallas, Paige, of course, winning the title her first night in WWE. So a lot of exciting things, a youth movement, so to say, as they move forward, which is exciting. I can't get that out of my head. But, so anything else you guys wanted to talk about as far as WrestleMania? Or?
Not really. I think not much more can be said.
Now, very quickly, I do want to talk with you, Dan, about Best of the Best. It, of course, Saturday, from the Flyer Skate Zone in Voorhees, New Jersey. 3 days away. And, of course, 12 of the world's best will be under one roof, but only one can leave the Skate Zone this year's Best of the Best, Dan. Now, it is on CZWI pay-per-view, or IPPV.com. First round tournament match, we have Caleb Connolly, we have former guest of the show, Azriel, and Biff Busick. Dan, your thoughts?
All these names, but this match specifically, I don't think I'm ready for. My ADD is going to kick in too much on this one. I don't think I'm ready for this one. Are we picking?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to pick Azrael on that one.
I got to go with Biff Busick. Maybe Caleb. I don't know, Dan. This one's a gimme.
Now that I've said that, I'm like, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know either, Dan. That said, moving right along, we have A.R. Fox, Andrew Everett, and Speedball Mike Bailey. Now, Speedball Mike Bailey might not be familiar with. However, he did take on the bulldozer Matt Tremont up for C4 promotion in Canada. That video, if you want to get a taste for Speedball Mike Bailey, is available. Just go to Matt Tremont's Facebook or Twitter, and the match is there. So that should give you an idea. Of course, A.R. Fox, these guys all high flyers, Dan.
Yeah, that's going to be a match that goes all over the place. If you're sitting there way at the back of the skate zone, be ready. They might just make their way up there to you. I think I'm going to go with A.R. Fox on that one.
I would probably say A.R. Fox as well. Last year, of course, he was in the finals, and a near riot ensued.
Yeah, well.
Moving right along, we have Bux Belmar, Chuck Taylor, and Lucky 13, last week's guest. I got to go with Lucky on this, Dan.
I was back and forth between Taylor and 13. I guess I'll go with Lucky 13, definitely.
Now, this one's very interesting, Dan. It is perhaps the last time you will see him in Combat Zone Wrestling. He is a legend. He has the longest world heavyweight title reign in CZW. Drake Younger, he's off to Florida. He's going to take on Tim Thatcher and the Greek god Papa Don. Indeed, Papa Don is in Best of the Best. Dan, what do you have to say? Who do you want to see move on, and who do you think will?
I think Younger will go on. What I want is Papa Don, of course.
I think
Drake Younger, I'll just say this, I pretty much think he's winning Best of the Best.
I don't know. I don't know. Tim Thatcher made his debut last month. The fans didn't really take to him all that well. Papa Don, he's known, if you live on the East Coast, specifically the Mid-Atlantic region, actually a little higher than the Mid-Atlantic region, the tri-state area, I guess I'll say, of Pennsylvania, Delaware, and New Jersey, and New York, so the quad state area, I suppose you could say. If you don't know who Papa Don is, then I don't know. You've never seen independent wrestling because he's everywhere, especially these days. I'm going to pick Papa Don, and I hope he has a good run.
I really hope he does. Not this first round. Not in the first round, please.
Also, we have a CZW Wired Championship match. It's a ladder match, Dan, as the champion Shane Strickland taking on former champion Devin Moore.
I'm going to pass on that one.
I'm going to go with Shane Strickland.
What I want is Shane Strickland. I'm going to pass on that one.
We have a number one contenders match for the CZW World Tag Team titles. Of course, the tag team titles right now held by, they used to be called the Slap Hunters. What are they now, Dan?
Isn't it the Juicy Product or something?
No, Juicy Product. Are they the tag champs? Did Juicy Product beat Reynolds and Silver?
Yeah.
They did? When did that happen?
No.
Reynolds and Silver, they're the tag team champs.
Yes, right. The number one contenders match is the
Ohio is for Killer against Juicy Product. Product. I know that, yes. But I'm talking about I was asking you who the champions were.
Oh, yeah, no, the Slop Hunters. Whatever.
But they're not the Slop Hunters.
The Beaver Boys.
Beaver Boys.
The name is.
It's something to do with women. I don't know, in a disparaging way. Now,
the Vagina Lovers. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Roast beef curtains. I don't know, Dan. Now,
the old deli meat.
Stop it. Because we could go on and on like it's after call. But now, anyway, it's the Juicy...
Oh, follow me at Dan 183.
It's the Juicy Product taking on Ohio is for Killers. Dan, your pick on that.
Ohio is for Killers. It's a yummy.
Sure. Now, this one's a grudge match, and I have my eye on this one because there's a mystery partner involved.
Goldberg. No, I'm sorry.
We have Black G's and Tommy Dreamer, the innovator of violence, still creating violence, taking on DJ Hyde and the three question marks, Stan.
Well, I'm going to pick, heck with it, DJ Hyde and the mystery guest. Please sign in.
Now, keep your eye on CZWrestling.com as well for official CZW social media for the latest updates. That was an awkward sentence. For media requests, vendor spaces, sponsorship opportunities, contact DJ Hyde at CZWrestling.com. So that should be interesting. Best of the Best is always a great tournament. It could be the very last time you'll see Drake Younger in Combat Zone Wrestling. Of course, there's a few debuts. Greek God Papadon is one. Make sure you make your way out. It looks like a very interesting card. And, hey, Best of the Best is one of the best tournaments in independent wrestling right now. You have the Battle of L.A. out there in a PWG. This is certainly up there with that. So
it looks like it's going to be another very well-received CCW event at the Skate Zone.
Yeah, and Azriel, of course, don't forget, the wild card in that match is Chrissy Rivera.
Yes.
She will be outside during that one. So
and you know what? I'm okay with that.
I figured you would be. Now, next week we are going to be joined by an Omega. We have our work cut out for us because this is such a young up-and-comer. There's not too much on him to research. It's Alex Benon Black. And he is a young MMA fighter fighting out of Texas. He's fought a few times for Legacy Fighting Championships, so should be interesting.
Yeah, I'll do my research and we'll see what he's got to say.
We're
always happy to talk to up-and-coming MMA.
Oh, definitely. In 2 weeks, we have an icon, I feel, in MMA, and that's Paul Bentello. That should be very interesting. The man has literally, besides Pride, been everywhere.
Yeah, he's fought a who's who of MMA stardom. So,
and I'm announcing it now. Coming back on April 30th, the owner of Legacy Fighting Championships, Mick Maynard, will be back with us to discuss his expansion. This year has been nothing short of impressive. So we're going to talk to him about, he had 3 weeks in a row, three events. We're going to talk to him about hit pieces that were written on him, perhaps. Maybe I'll bring that up.
Ooh.
Yeah, there was a guy from some blog, is the best way I can describe it, that wasn't too happy with the tickets he got for free to cover the event.
Free tickets?
Yeah, free tickets. He
the audacity.
He wanted to be ringside, I guess.
Oh.
I don't know. but it was a very interesting thing, and I thought Mick's a classy guy. I like Mick a lot, and he's always willing to come on here. This will be his second appearance, so if you missed his first, this is the second time, and it's always an honor when you have a guy. I mean, he might be a regional, but it is on Access TV. He does have national coverage. And a lot of people say after Bellator and World Series of Fighting, that's the next promotion. So, of course, Holly Holm fights there. Cejudo's another guy. Ryan Hollis. Bentello. So they do have Leonard Garcia. We'll talk to him about that because that was something that happened after we talked to him. I think Garcia was signed, but we really didn't get into Leonard Garcia. But that all being said, we have some the rest of April will be dedicated more so to MMA. But next week, Dan, we get to talk about Best of the Best. Are you going to consider purchasing that on CWIPPV.com?
Of course I am. It's already considered and done.
Already considered and done. And I suggest people also get out there and do the same, because that is I think it's going to be a great event. What do you think, Dan?
Like I said before, the people that are... I know why you're doing it. The people that... No, I'm not saying anything. It's going to be a great show, and It's going to be electric.
Electric. You can cut the electricity with a knife. Now, so that's what we got in store. Omega, I hate you so much, Dan. You made me go to the point of saying roast beef curtains on you. Omega, where can the fine people find
you? Twice.
Jeez. Follow me on Twitter at Omega Squad.
Dan, how about yourself?
The things I'm picturing. You can find me on Twitter at DanLaw83 and Obey the Pug and Obey Pug Show. We'll have Paul Baker on next week.
Oh, cool. Is this a playoff preview?
Playoff preview. All the playoff positions will be filled and the season will be over and the playoffs shall begin.
I am, of course, the Dean of Roast Beef Curtains. No, I'm the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County. You can also find the official Twitter of HIC Talk Radio at HIC Talk Radio. And you can also go to the blog, HICTalkRadio.com. Now, we have some sponsors, and this kind of goes with what we've been talking about tonight. One of our newest sponsors is, of course, STDCheck.com. So,
always take care of
if you respect. if you happen to be in New Orleans on Bourbon Street, perhaps you might want to go to HICTalkRadio.com, click on STDCheck.com. They offer 15-minute STD checking. It's 100% confidential, and it's CLIA certified. Also, make sure you go to MMAWarehouse.com. Just click on the picture on the sidebar, and you can go shopping there. There's always some coupons available right now. If you spend $50 in Bad Boy merchandise, you get a free Bad Boy water bottle. Also go check out tfury.com. They have one new $11 shirt every day. And these are quality shirts. You should check it out. Make sure you go to hictalkradio.com. And you can just click on tfury.com. Get there and get your shirts. There's also specials all the time. Once they're out of the $11 shirt, they go into the gallery. And there's actually right now, anybody want a peanut? And it's Andre the Giant looking like a Peanuts character. The links are on all this week's. You can go to any of the posts from this week. Just click on that, and you'll be taken right to it. And you can buy a very interesting shirt as far as that goes. Also, we are on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Make sure you check us out there as well. And, Dan, I'll tell you what. It's been an interesting show. We've covered a lot of bases. But life is real, Dan.
Life.